In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yes, indeed. It's time to talk movies with Alan Adams of The Main Edge on Pass the Popcorn. But it's not just any Pass the Popcorn segment, already awesome in their own right, but it marks the return of Alan to our studio. Hello, sir.
Hello. It's lovely to be back for the first time in, what, 16 months?
I would say so.
Something like that?
You'll look even better in person.
Oh, well, thank you. Right back at you.
Good to see you. Good to have you here with us.
It's nice to be back in here. As you were saying, it looks remarkably the same.
Well, we kept it kind of as a shrine to you. We've moved virtually nothing.
I mean the big 5x5 poster of my head above on the walls here. It's a little much.
Well, but you weren't here. We need
something.
It's true.
And you need something whose eyes you can stare into as you lovingly listen to me chatter on about whatever.
Yeah. By the way, I was going to watch it anyway, but then when you gave it such a glowing recommendation, I said, I've got to check it out. Got my free month of Hulu. Oh, man, Summer of Soul, everything promised and more.
Isn't that something, man?
God, that was good.
Yeah, such a good movie.
And you were right, too. Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. Oh.
Like, just, I mean, it's just one of those things where you watch people, like, remember in real time something that was so clearly important to them. It's just a marvelous piece of filmmaking. Like, it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience to watch.
And the guy who was a young guy when he went to see the show, who bookends the film, he was fantastic.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to have this person who, you know, we all have those memories from when we were young where it's like, did that happen? Like, was that a thing that actually was, or am I conflating that with something I heard or something I saw on television or whatever? And to have that sort of, just the evidence placed in front of you after, you know, however 50 years is just, yeah, I thought it was just a remarkable movie.
Well, a couple movies this week that I'm very interested to hear about. Where should we begin?
Let's start with the big box office, excitement with, the MCU is back, baby.
Yeah.
It's been just about a little over two years since an MCU movie graced the big screen. We've had a couple of television offerings in the interim, but this is the first one. This is the MCU's return to the big screen, or if this is your preference, it is available through Disney Plus's premium access, $30, and you can watch it at home. I did go to the movie theater to see it. I feel pretty strongly about these movies as cinematic experiences. And, as we are currently in a place where I feel relatively secure going to a movie theater, I figured I'd take advantage because, God knows how long that's going to last the way things are going. But it's ostensibly the movie that kicks off the sort of the phase four of the, Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's an interesting way to do that because it's a flashback movie. Like, this is a movie that takes place, the events of this movie take place basically between the events of Captain America Civil War and Avengers Infinity War. So it's set in 2016. It was intended to come out before all of these television offerings. And so there's a little convolution as far as the chronology is concerned, not a ton, and this movie actually benefits in that it's not necessarily as tied into the sort of overarching narrative as much as some people are probably hoping it will be. It's far more self-contained than a lot of these Marvel movies are, but all that being said, I quite liked it. Like, I had a good time, even if it was I don't want to use the term generic, but it's less a superhero movie and more of sort of an action adventure in the style of, you know, a Jason Bourne movie or a James Bond movie, like that sort of thing. It's one where, frankly, if you don't know a ton about the MCU, you could still enjoy this movie because there's not a ton of lore that you need to have going into this. The basic gist: we start in 1995, suburban Ohio. There's a family of four. And you know, they seem pretty typical until the dad comes home and is like, we got to go. And he's got a, like a little computer disc in his pocket, and they take off. And there's this huge chase scene where they fight off police and wind up in a plane that flies to Cuba, where we find out that they are a Russian sleeper cell, you know, not married. The kids aren't theirs, et cetera. And then the family sort of is separated in this moment. And then we flash forward to the quote unquote present day, which is 2016. So 5 years ago. And that's when the story starts. We have Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, played by Scarlett Johansson, is in the process of sort of, she's on the run following the events of Captain America Civil War. She is being pursued by a Secretary of State, Thaddeus Ross, played by William Hurt, who apparently only does Marvel movies now, which is remarkable to me. You know, she violated the Sokovia Accords and so needs to be brought into custody. But she evades them, as, you know, superheroes are wont to do. Simultaneously, we meet a new character, a woman by the name of Yelena, played by the always wonderful Florence Pugh, who is also a trained assassin of the same sort of ilk. But we discover that she's sort of freed from the control of her handlers by a chemical that she then takes onto herself and sends to her, well, we find out, her sister. And then they come together, and the sort of conflict begins from there. They decide, well, we have to free the rest of the quote-unquote Black Widows, but we can't do it alone. So they go out and find their former, you know, quote-unquote parents, the absolutely delightful David Harbour, plays basically the Russian equivalent of Captain America, only he's like a sort of a big sort of goofy buffoon. Like, he has the superpowers and everything, but he's been moldering away in prison for many years. And then we have sort of a Black Widow Prime, their mother Melina, played by the also excellent Rachel Weisz. And the family gets back together in an effort to sort of shut down the Red Room, the Red Room being the training program for these Black Widow soldiers, once and for all. And, well, Rich, it's not as easy as all that, obviously. But yeah, and that's basically it. So it has a lot of that sort of spy movie energy, and you don't get a ton of the superhero stuff. Like, again, I mentioned, David Harbour has some of those powers, but he's almost the comic relief in this movie. His accent is ludicrous, but he's got this crazy beard, and he's clearly having a ball. And yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was a lot of fun. I knew I was going to enjoy it, and I will concede my own personal biases. Like, I think it was good, but I can't speak for certain. I can't speak objectively because I've been waiting so long to see one of these movies again, because I do love them so much. And so it was really, you know, it was a really wonderful experience to see it in a movie theater, to see it with other people, to sort of engage in that sort of group culture consumption that we just haven't really had the opportunity to do so much, you know. And so, yeah, like, It's not top tier Marvel, you know, and I think there are going to be some folks who express disappointment at the general lack of connection to the overall arc. But the performances are great. You know, it's funny. Scarlett Johansson is a brilliantly talented actress. She's probably 4 out of 4 here, because Pugh absolutely runs away with this movie. Like, she was born to be in this kind of movie because she's a brilliantly talented actress. But she can handle the timing, both in terms of the physicality and comedically. That it's a very, you know, it's a very rare skill set, I think, but she possesses all those qualities, and, you know, to a great degree. You know, Harbour's a delight. Rachel Weisz, underused, but you know, she's also wonderfully talented. Yeah, everybody's having fun, and, you know, they're having fun, we're having fun, and it's just, I don't know, it's just nice to see those folks again.
And how were people in the movie theater? Did they forget what it was like? Are they talking like they're sitting at home on their couch?
It's gotten better because, you know, I started going back to the movies about a month ago, maybe a little longer than that. And initially it was like, yeah, it was, people thought they were in their living rooms, like looking at their phones, talking at regular volume. And it's just like, come on, people, like, act like, I know you haven't been anywhere in a year and a half, but act like you've been somewhere.
Right.
But yeah, but for this one, it was considerably better. And I think a lot of that too is the degree of engagement, because everyone else was also very enthusiastic to see this movie. So yeah, it's again, not top tier, but If you like these movies, you're going to have a good time.
Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Downtown. I'm very excited to see this, and I'm excited to hear what you thought of Roadrunner, the documentary about Anthony Bourdain.
So Sheridan and I went last night, actually, to Waterville because Roadrunner was screening as part of the Maine International Film Festival.
Right.
Last night was the only screening, and so we made it a point because we were both such huge fans of Anthony Bourdain. And yeah, man, like, I knew I wanted to see this movie as soon as I knew it was a thing. And it 100% delivers. Like, it is just this wonderfully intimate and well-crafted portrait of a flawed but just brilliant man. You know, it's like Anthony Bourdain was an icon for like 2 decades, you know, right from like when Kitchen Confidential dropped in like 1999, I think, right up through until his unfortunate passing. It was like he was a huge cultural figure. And that's the part of his life that this movie is about. Like, there's not a lot. There's not really any, like, you know, growing up in Provincetown and, right, you know, high school and stuff like that. There's not any of that. Like, we basically hit the ground running with the impending release of Kitchen Confidential. And there's footage from that time. And a lot of it's like home video type stuff. And it's just like, and it's so fascinating to watch because you're like, oh yeah, no, he's always kind of been that guy. Like, I mean, he's, you know, the persona has been crafted to some degree, but the reality is, and it's like this with certain, you know, certain figures, like that person that you saw on television, that was pretty much him. Like, wow. it was just, you know, I mean, obviously, like, some of it is, you know, built for the camera and whatnot, but that sort of inquisitiveness, the curiosity, the intelligence, the complete and utter lack of blanks to give, like, that was all real. And so from those moments where you're watching that early footage of him doing the talk show circuit for Kitchen Confidential, to the early days of A Cook's Tour, which was his first show, up through into the world of No Reservations and Parts Unknown, and you get to watch as he sort of becomes this zeitgeist sort of figure. All the while, we're also getting all this conversation with the people that knew him best, former producing partners and you know, crew members. Which, and I didn't know this, but the majority of people who worked with him on these shows worked on all of them. Like, it was just like from beginning to end, like, these people were with him for years, like decades sometimes. And I feel like that's the sort of thing that speaks to the loyalty that he had for people and that he inspired in people. There are moments, it's brutally sad, and it's, you know, you can see how hurt all of these people still are, whether they're the people who worked with him or his friends, like some celebrity chef sort of friends are kicking around, David Chang, Eric B. Baer. And then, you know, he was also friends with artists and musicians. Josh Homme of the Queens of the Stone Age is a prominent figure in this documentary. And we also spend a good deal of time with his with Octavia, his second wife, and the mother of his daughter. And all of these people sort of walk us through their relationships with him, even as they were watching him sort of grow and evolve into the sort of figure that he did. And just this idea of a person who, you know, he was always very, you know, very forthcoming and frank about his history with addiction. And one of the things that you kind of see in this movie is a person whose addictive qualities never left. He just kept changing the focus.
Right.
And so it's like, if it's not drugs, it's booze. And if it's not booze, it's, you know, travel. And if it's not travel, it's like, he went through a jiu-jitsu phase. You know, it's just like, it's someone who needs that sort of, like, that focus. And, you know, we get to watch as all these people work through their relationship with him as, you know, there's, according to what I've seen, the director, Morgan Neville, started from a place of approximately 100,000 hours of archival footage.
Wow.
Because none of this, like, I can't say none for certain, but very little of what you see in this movie is stuff that you saw on TV. Like, it's a lot of outtakes, a lot of B-roll, and it's just a wonderful sort of look, sort of peek behind the curtain at someone who was just an absolutely fascinating figure. Someone with who battled his demons for a very long time, and it's very sad to think about what we lost when he sort of succumbed as far as that fight is concerned.
Well, I hope it gets into some wider release at some point.
It's supposed to. It's supposed to go. The full theatrical release is supposed to take place this Friday. I don't know how wide it's going. It might start limited, but I also know that there are plans. Nothing set in stone, but eventually the film will be screening on both HBO Max and CNN, who were production partners as far as putting the movie together. But yeah, like Morgan Neville, man, like he's exactly the person that you want to tell this kind of story. Like whether you're talking about 20 Feet from Stardom or Won't You Be My Neighbor, which it's stunning how many parallels this movie carries to Won't You Be My Neighbor. And you wouldn't think about it. Like, you would think that Fred Rogers and Anthony Bourdain were sort of diametrically opposite people. And in most ways, they were. But what's so fascinating about it is the one huge thing that they shared was the fact that both were completely, utterly, and unabashedly themselves. And that's a very rare quality. And so to see that sort of play out both through this archival footage and through the memories of these people that they have of Anthony Bourdain. It just, yeah, like it was an absolutely heartbreaking movie, also hilarious and bleak and cynical and just an incredible movie going experience that if you have any interest in Anthony Bourdain, I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. Alan, thanks. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Nice to be back.
Oh, so good to have you here in person. You want to do it again Wednesday?
You know what? I think I do.
I mean, Bruce will be here too.
Oh, man. Yeah, getting the band back together.
There
Love
you go.
It.
All right. Thanks, Al. We'll see you then.
Yes, sir.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge talking movies here on Downtown.